You're listening to Album Swap, a podcast about sharing music with your friends. Welcome to episode 7 of Album Swap.
007.
The secret agent episode.
Yeah, like James Bond, that guy.
We went to apologize for some sound difficulties we had last week at the closing segment. Had some microphone issues, but we've since fixed that, upgraded our equipment. We threw some pictures out on the social.
On the social. The World Wide Web.
The World Wide Web.
Yeah.
And hopefully this week we have much better audio quality for you to enjoy.
Make sure the right buttons are pushed this week, right?
So this week we have two new albums that we swapped. The first one is Raging Slab, Dynamite Monster Boogie Concert. Fred, you had a chance to dive in a little bit of this. I picked it partially because of the whole discussion on Led Zeppelin last week and that John Paul Jones is featured on one of the tracks.
Yeah, yeah, no, this was cool. I had actually never heard of Raging Slab before. Yeah, definitely hadn't heard of the album. So, yeah, no, I was excited to get it. It was a lot of fun. There's a lot of cool little quirkinesses to it. So John Paul Jones was definitely one of them. But, yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I was excited to give you, Gary Clark Jr., his most recent album, the Story of Sonny Boy Slim, 2015 album. So I love Gary Clark Jr. And you, I mean, I guess you've heard of him, but you really
I've heard of him.
But you hadn't, hadn't listened to his album recently.
Yeah, it was the first time I got a chance to digest.
He came on the scene a few years ago, 2010, I think, at Eric Clapton's Crossroads, and kind of blows up and ends up getting signed to a label after that, and came out with an album called Black and Blue that I considered when I was thinking which Gary Clark Jr. album I wanted to give. I was kind of going back and forth, but that first one, you know, it was his first kind of debut album, and so he had all these different producers working with him. And the second album, he, rather than being out in LA with all those producers, takes it back to Austin and produces the thing by himself. I mean, I think he has like some sound engineers working with him, but this was his work. And he gets labeled a lot as like the next great blues guitarist, and you know, that's just what he is. And even though his chops on the guitar is like, it's amazing, he is unbelievable, like maybe the best at that, but he is way more of a like, I don't know, all around musician or artist than he is just a blues guitarist, you know. So I definitely wanted to give this album, because it has, I mean, I guess we'll wait till you break it down, but it has a lot of R&B quality. Like, it probably is more of an R&B album than it is a blues album. Like, it feels more like a John Legend album with a guitar.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely had a lot more of an R&B and soul feel to it.
Yeah, which is his sound. I mean, that is his music. And so that's why I gave you this album, because I feel like this is kind of the first time where he's had that opportunity to showcase what you know, Gary Clark Jr. is all about.
Yes, yeah. So it was a little bit different at first. I thought it would be a little more
kind of throws you for a loop if you're
Texas
expecting
blues.
Yeah, if you're expecting, you know, another SRV album, Stevie Ray Vaughan album, then
yeah, I figured
it's
something
be a little bit
between
different.
Say Stevie Ray Vaughan and like Eric Clapton,
and he's got the chops. You can hear it, right? Yeah. You can hear it on some of his solos and a lot of those riffs. But yeah, the songs are definitely more of the R&B style.
All right, so those are the two albums we swapped this week. I want to remind you that we are putting out our best of the first early episodes playlist on Spotify. We'll be sharing that out on social with links to it, but you can also look up Album Swap on Spotify and check out those playlists. We're on social as well. Feel free to drop us a line there and let us know what you like that.
Or what you don't like. Tell us that we suck. I'd be all right with that. But yeah, Twitter.
Haters welcome.
Yeah, Twitter, Facebook, all of them, right?
And as well, you know, if you get a chance to rate us on like iTunes or Google Play, we'd love it.
Subscribe on iTunes. Tell your friends, tell your family.
That's right. So we're going to take a quick break and come back with Raging Slab, Dynamite Monster Boogie Concert.
Stay tuned for more Album Swap.
And we're back with Raging Slab, Dynamite Monster Boogie Concert.
Yeah, what a wicked name for the album. And even we were talking earlier, like, even the name of the band's kind of odd. You said it was it's a trucker term? Is that right?
Trucker term, what they call the road. The road is like the raging slab.
Gotcha. So we'll go ahead and jump into Raging Slab. Dynamite Monster Boogie Concert. Album came out in 1993. 12 songs, 47 minutes long. So the story of Raging Slab, like I said in the first segment, I didn't know about this band until right now. Their story is like such a rock and roll like tragedy, like the kind of the typical one where... they meet the two kind of main people in the band, I guess, like the vocals and the guitar, slide guitar, who is Elise, right?
Elise Steinem
was the guitarist, slide guitarist.
Yeah.
The guitar was the shape of America, badass.
American.
Yeah, really cool. And then the lead singer was Greg Strzemka. We just tried for like 10 minutes to try to get that name. Strzemka, whatever it is. And so they meet in 1983. They start playing gigs in New York City, New Jersey. Butthole Surfers were one of the bands they play with a lot. White Zombie was actually like their neighbors.
Yep.
So you're kind of doing the circuit with these guys. 87 comes around. They put out an album. And after that, all the major labels are just sweating them hard. And apparently like, there was like a bidding war. Everybody wanted Raging Slab at that time. And they ended up signing with RCA. And about that same time, Guitar World says, you know, basically kind of putting people on notice. Like, these guys are basically Lynyrd Skynyrd meets Metallica. That was kind of how they were framed. So
they're hot.
Yeah, they were hot. And they started touring with Red Hot Chili Peppers, the Ramones, Molly Hatchet, Warrant. Like, they were about... late 80s into the 90s, they were the hot ticket. But then they started having issues with the albums they were producing. Record execs didn't like the RCA execs. They weren't excited about it, didn't like the direction that was going, so they wouldn't like support the release, really. Like any stuff they were coming out with, they'd either push back or they just wouldn't help promote it at all.
It's like the old school tale of the band at war with the label.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what I mean. This is like your rock and roll tragedy, that story, almost like Shakespearean, right? So after that, they have a couple bad albums with RCA, Rick Rubin, who was a big fan of them, really liked them, buys the contract out with RCA and signs them to Def American.
Yeah, when he first started it.
Yeah, and that label at that point was blowing up. So that kind of brings us to where this album comes in.
Yeah.
Dynamite Monster Boogie Concert was the first album that they put out under Rick Rubin's label, Def American, and John Paul Jones helped out on it. One of the tracks he did some strings for it. So,
did some strings.
Yeah. So they had some really good resources backing up this one, and this is, I guess, considered their best album.
Yeah, it's totally their best album, and I heard of this when it came out and saw that Rick Rubin and Brendan O'Brien were involved.
That kind of drew you to it, right?
Yeah, you knew it was going to be good because they were really kind of uncovering those nuggets of awesome music. At the time, and then they had a video that had Gary Coleman,
so they had the
nostalgic TV Gary Coleman from Different Strokes, you know, the classic.
Yeah.
What you talking about, Willis?
Yeah, right. So they also had a couple videos around that time that were getting popular. That probably helped them. I know they had some on the MTV Countdowns and things like that.
Yeah,
this was the age of that. MTV and videos and stuff.
Yeah, like if you put a former child star or somebody a bit retro at that time, it was really cool. Everybody knew who they were.
Right.
Like if he did it now, and I don't even know if Gary Coleman's still alive. I think he's passed on, but nonetheless, people would have, I think, a tougher time having that relationship. So yeah, it was neat. It was different. They had this kind of different sound that you weren't hearing on MTV or radio at the time. You know, I liked it because I love Skynyrd. I love Metallica. So for me, it kind of hit my sweet spot.
They definitely meshed that kind of hard rock and the multi guitar southern rock kind of feel to Allman Brothers, almost like kind of
the way the
guitars play together, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. So 93 Dynamite Monster Boogie Concert comes out. After that, they started having issues with Rick Rubin as far as him not liking what they were putting out. I think he said one of the albums after this, there just weren't any songs on it. He was like, this is garbage.
Yeah.
He pushed it back. So they start, you know, basically having issues. Warner Brothers, who was the distributor for Rick Rubin's label, they sever ties and nobody tells Raging Slab, and they basically get kind of screwed legally.
Yeah.
And they said that they were, you know, you're faced with taking everything to court and financially ruining yourself, or basically sitting on your hands for a couple years and not producing any new music. And so that's what they did up until 2000. They just didn't produce anything new. I think they played a lot. They had some side projects, but Raging Slab didn't put anything out until, like, I think 2001 was the first time in 6 years they actually came out with new music because of this whole just legal crap, really,
yeah,
that they were having to deal with.
Searching for them on the web and finding, like I was telling you earlier, like albums like The Dealer, which it kept saying coming out soon and then it didn't. Or, like, to get it, you had to go through some hoops and ladders.
Right.
And it wasn't really worth it because they weren't getting any reviews. They weren't getting any airplay.
It's like they got thrown into a corner and nobody wanted to deal with them.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of the stuff
that came out later didn't have really as good of a sound.
Right, yeah.
The production wasn't there.
Right, and so 2001 is when they came out with the next new album. And then 2002, they came out with another one, both on TP Records, which was an independent label. And that was it. They took a long hiatus after that. One of, I think, the bassist, Alec Morgan, was suffering from heart failure, congestive heart failure. It just, you know, things weren't working out. So they take a long hiatus, and then to bookend this story, on March 30th, 2017, just a couple months ago, the guitarist, Lee Steinem, passed away.
Yeah.
Three-year battle with cancer, and she just passed away recently, and that was announced on their, I think, Facebook page or fan page or something. So, yeah, just kind of, you know, it's a tragic story of a American rock and roll band that put out some good stuff and just kind of never broke through. They caused some bad breaks. Like, that's kind of really what happened.
I mean,
and that happens in the industry.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. This was like their biggest breakthrough, and it was a ripple at best.
And it was, it's a great way to put it.
And, you know, it was kind of a shame because, you know, after this came out, you felt like, oh, okay, like, next album's going to be a little bit bigger,
right,
and stuff like that.
Especially with Rick Rubin behind it.
Yeah, and Rick Rubin behind it, and this cool slide guitar and all that. It was a bit disappointing, but nonetheless, we did at least have this gem captured in time back in 1993.
Yeah, so we'll go ahead and jump into that. So Dynamite Monster Boogie Concert, love the name. Just bananas, just a crazy name.
Yeah, you said you didn't like the album cover because it looks a bit clip artish.
Well, it looks very clip artish. I do like how they kind of, what it looks like the words are inverted, you know, or Dynamite is. So yeah, I mean, there's some cool parts to it, but yeah, overall it's just
more specifically the boot. So the we'll put it up on the
specifically
on the,
post, the boot and like the little there's a boot with like a wing
boot with
on
like
it.
A wing on yeah. It. Yeah,
I've seen better album covers, but I love the name, and for no other reason than it's just absolutely bananas.
It kind of has all the buzzwords in the title.
Sure, yeah. Dynamite Monster Boogie Concert. This was their fifth full-length album. It was only the third to receive release, though. Like we were talking about, they had a lot of issues with that. Rock Hard magazine ranked, I guess, the 500 greatest rock and metal albums of all time. This one was number 395, so take that for what it's worth. And yeah, so we're going to go ahead and jump into it. Track one is called Anywhere But Here. This is the track that they had the music video with Gary Coleman.
Yeah.
I guess, I don't know if they had singles. I don't know if that was really
this was it. This was a single.
So this is the one that they were pumping. I'd love the beginning. I don't know if we'll be able to get it on the podcast, but there's like coins dropping,
a
50
it's a coin
cent piece
flipping,
or something. Yeah. And I just kind of, I don't know, for some reason I like that. It's quirky.
And then it goes into the drum.
Yeah.
It kind of
love the drums.
It goes right in.
Love
the
drums,
drums
intro. There's female backups in the chorus that are just great, just sound amazing. And the guitar riff, specifically right after the chorus, is just bananas. So we're going to, I'll just play a little bit of the first track, Anywhere But Here.
Yeah.
So the chorus, I love it. I love the backup singers coming in. I almost want to, I'm going to let it kind of fade here because I'm going to pull it back up. We're going to listen to the guitar after the chorus. Just hard, sludgy guitars. Just a great guitar work throughout the entire album. And again, has that Skynyrd feel to it.
Yeah, it's got that
rock and roll, man. Rock and roll.
It's got that Skynyrd sound to it, but just heavier.
Heavy. Yeah. So yeah, track one, Anywhere But Here. Love it. We'll go down to track number two called Weatherman. This is again the start of this has like guitar picking. Like it's just disgusting guitar work. Kind of has like Black Crowes kind of sound, kind of feel to it. And the drums and the guitar in the, I think it's like the last minute of this song, the drums and guitar just go crazy, like just disgusting. But we'll play a little bit of it here. And again, that the guitar picking at the start is just, it's awesome. Rock and roll, man.
It is.
Like, just pretty much, there's nothing else to really say.
Yeah, I agree.
It's rocking and it's rolling.
The picking at the beginning, just, again, it gives it that Southern rock sound.
Oh, yeah.
And it drives the beat a lot, which the vocals, you know, we were talking earlier that the vocalist at times, you know, maybe hits some limits, but I think on the first two tracks, he nails it.
Yeah, and he we talked about that earlier, and we'll get into more on some of these songs. I feel like the vocals does have some weak moments, but there are some moments, like you said, in these first two tracks, there's a couple other tracks that his vocals are perfect for it.
Yeah.
I do think in some of those songs, like there, like they do a good job. When his vocals are the strongest, they do a good job of like really
rounding out the sound.
Well, that but more like mirroring his vocals with the guitar, like they're doing the same notes and stuff. And I think that really helps kind of build the vocals, like it because anytime some of these songs where he's by himself and it's kind of like he's just singing, he can't really carry it. Now we were was it podcast episode number two, the second podcast we did, Cry of Love, like Kelly would destroy as the front man of this band.
Kelly Holland singing these songs.
Yeah, Cry of Slab. Sick. That's what they should have. Cry of Slab should have been the big band.
Hashtag.
So we'll jump down to track number three. It's called Pearly.
Pearly.
This is a great song too. So the guitars sound more like Skynyrd on this one than the first two, even though they did kind of sound like Skynyrd. They really sound like it here. This song has like a dark, almost kind of like an evil sound. Like it's a driving blues, but it has this kind of like, again, dark and kind of evil. The slide guitar on it is just filthy. And we're actually playing a couple parts of the song because there's a couple parts that are just really, really disgusting. But we'll go ahead and start it from the top. Just dirty. You know what I mean? Like it has a kind of like a meanness to it. There's an evilness or something there. Like it's
gnarly.
It is gnarly, man. It really is. Yeah. So we'll fast forward it now. It's about the 1:30 mark. The guitars come in and it is just. I think the kids say face melting. Yeah. Just go ahead and start picking your face up off the floor. Yeah, I mean, that is so disgusting.
That rhythm part behind it.
Oh, yeah.
That whole metal sound.
Yeah.
Is just awesome.
Yeah, they just kind of throw it in there. Like, yeah. A couple measures.
Just backs it up, and then you get the slide coming back in. I agree. That was one of the things I loved about this album when you first bought it and listened to it, was the guitar work is...
It's so tight, too. They played together so well. The sounds go together very well. So, yeah, so there's one more part as far as the guitars go, and we're going to pull that up right now. Man, I'm gonna go get a bucket so we can just pick our faces up off the floor because they are completely melted right now. Completely melted.
That's the thing. Yeah, Elise was a phenomenal guitar player.
And they slow it down. They cut it. They cut the time there at the end of that song, and it just gets raunchy, sludgy, raunchy, dirty. Pick whatever just nasty, disgusting adjective you want to use, and just throw it in there.
It's got almost disgusting. A little bit of like Texas blues sound to it.
For sure, yeah. Just nasty guitars. That's track 3, Pearly, is the name of that one. Well, we'll jump down. Track number 4 is called So Help Me. So this one is like one of the things I love about this album is there's a couple tracks where it's like a complete change of pace. Like we're going from like this mean kind of evil driving rock and roll, southern rock, sludgy, you know, high squealing guitars to... something you think you would hear from the Punch Brothers, which is a modern band now. You know what I mean? Like, the banjo playing isn't as good as Noam Pikelny from the Punch Brothers. That guy's a straight monster. But but the vocals sound like Chris Thiele, who's the lead singer of the Punch Brothers. And this kind of has that folksy bluegrass feel, which after the first 3 tracks, you wouldn't have guessed. Like, you wouldn't have guessed that. So, yeah, so we'll hop down. So Help Me. So this one, I'm gonna pull it up back up in a little bit when he really gets into the chorus because his vocals sound great.
He sounds good on this track.
Like this is one where his vocals really shine. It's like the picking, the banjo just goes really, 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 really well with his vocals. And we'll pull it up here in the chorus. I mean, it's a beautiful song.
It's unexected, I agree with you, after hearing the first 3
and I like
much
it,
heavier
man.
Tracks,
like,
and then they come back with this kind of bluegrass ballad almost.
Such a change of pace, right? Yeah. And again, his vocals shine on that track. Like, it's great. So,
and again, I think the production is so clean.
Very clean. Very clean. That's a great, yeah. It
props
really
out
is.
To Brendan O'Brien.
Yeah, producer. Props out to Brendan O'Brien, producer. Yeah, so track 4, So Help Me. Change of pace. We'll drop down track number 5, What Have You Done? So as quickly as they change pace, they go back into the mean, just like Southern rock. The guitars are screaming, the drums are banging. The guitar riff is just straight disgusting. So we'll hop into track five. What Have You Done? So this is like very sludgy rock and roll, but it's very 90s rock and roll too.
Yeah, you know this could have been, this should have been a big hit, I think.
It really has that catchiness that would have, that should have caught on the radios back then, I guess.
Yeah, the solos are kind of cool towards the end when they have that, you know, the guitar kind of speeds up a little bit.
And right, yeah, at the back end, and yeah, forth. Yeah.
At the same time, you know, if Guns N' Roses was having hits with ballads, they should have gotten airplay with this.
For sure, I mean, for sure. You know. And I'm going to pull it up now. This the guitar solo in this is just, we got to listen to it.
Sounds like you could have put that like that segment there. It sounds like a Guns N' Roses song.
No doubt, yeah. You know?
But yeah, I was surprised that they didn't. You know, maybe they should have released this as the video.
Sure,
had a little more boogie.
I'm sure they could have. There's a couple of things that maybe they would have liked to have changed back then. But a great song. Surprised it wasn't a bigger hit for them. That was track five. What Have You Done? So we'll hop down track six. Take a Hold. This has a very Allman Brothers guitar sound at the intros, like more specifically like Dickie Betts. Really like the organs in this track. The chorus has like a real gospel kind of church feel to it that I really dig. Backup singers and just the message in general are really kind of gospel Philly. Really, really, really cool. Cool sound. Also kind of has like, again, that kind of Black Crowes sound to it, I thought. But again, this is one of those songs where if you think about it like it's the Black Crowes, like you realize that Chris Robinson and somebody like Kelly from Cry of Love were a lot better than this. Than the vocals on this track. Yeah. So Take a Hold, track six, we'll play a little bit of that. It's a great, like, just a great rock and roll song. But again, you can tell, like, the vocals were just, like, a little bit better. If it was Chris Robinson, if it was Kelly, like,
you
man.
You know who else would
they
rock
would,
that?
They would kick the door down if it was Kelly.
You know who else would rock it is Warren Haynes.
Warren Haynes would rock
Warren
that,
Haynes
yeah.
Warren Haynes would rock that.
For sure.
He'd play the slide and then bring in that, like, baritone,
really,
soulful.
Really belled out the vocals. Yeah, that's a
so
great
Warren, if you're listening this summer when you play Raleigh, with Government Mule.
And Galactica.
Play Take a Hold.
Yeah, Play Take a Hold by Rage and Slab. That would be great. and he'll credit the podcast.
That's right. Hashtag.
Album slot breaking news. No big deal. Okay, so we'll hop down to the next one. We're just hopping on down the track list. Track number 7, Laughing and Crying. No G's on those.
That's two. Right.
Laughing and Crying. So this this song I didn't really like.
Yeah.
So this is one where, like, again, the vocals are not that great, and it's really kind of like the chorus is kind of has that like catchy country feel to it, almost like Train, like the band Train. And it's just, man, like, I'm only gonna play 15 seconds of it because once it gets into the chorus, it just goes from being like a pretty cool song to just straight up lame. So we'll play, but the guitar riff is good, and it's good enough. So we'll play a couple seconds of it so you can get a little taste of that. Got my trucker hat on,
this
and
song,
the tailgate down.
The beginning, that beginning guitar part actually reminds me a little bit of Living Color.
Sure, okay.
Like Vernon Reid.
Yeah.
The way the notes go and all that. So yeah, I agree with you.
Sick.
Like,
it's a good riff.
It's the guitar is the best part of this song. It doesn't really go anywhere.
Once it gets into the chorus, song, it gets bad, man. It's not that cool. Like, the chorus is pretty bad.
Yeah.
The chorus is pretty bad.
You can throw it away.
Yeah, we're going to throw that one away and go to the next track, track number 8. Don't Worry About the Bomb. This is another one. It's a pretty good song. I was kind of lukewarm because of the vocals. The drums, especially in the last minute of the track, is just sick, like really dirty. The guitar playing, as every single track on this, is disgusting, and the solo is absolutely filthy. So we'll play a little bit of it of track 8. Don't Worry About the Bomb. It has kind of like a little boogie to that one.
It's got a little boogie to it.
A little funkiness to it.
This is another song like Kelly.
Yeah, well, absolutely. That's what I mean. Like, I'm kind of lukewarm on it because the vocals hold the song back a little bit.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, Kelly.
It needs a stronger voice to, like, with that band being so awesome.
Yeah.
Just jamming it out.
They need to be on the same, the vocals need to be on the same level as the guitars, honestly. But yeah, so we'll go ahead. Next one. Track 9. It's called Lynn, Lynne. This is the one with John Paul Jones from Led Zeppelin. And he I guess he's the one playing the strings, right?
He's playing the strings.
Yep. So, we'll go ahead and hop into this one. This is disgusting, by the way. The violin is just rotten. This is like a beautiful, beautiful song. Like,
yes.
Very well put together. So, one where his vocals are really good on it. Like, whenever he gets to the chorus, he really, like, he, like, falls really into the chorus, kind of, the vocals, and it's, like, a really, like, not, like, soft, kind of a soft and, like, comfortable feel, man. It's, like, really, like, you're, like laying in a field of flowers or something, you know what I mean? Like, it's a great song, like, beautiful song. It's probably my favorite on the album because it is such a, it's another one that's a huge change of pace, right? It's totally different.
Totally unexpected.
Yeah, it sounds kind of, has that Punch Brothers feel to it and stuff, and yeah, man, just really, really, really disgusting. It has a 90s feel to it, too. Kind of feels like
This
probably more his vocals that do that. But
I'd say this and, like, Pearly, like, were before a lot of the Americana broke out and bluegrass got popular again around, say, 95, like, Oh Brother and all that.
Right.
So it was kind of interesting. And
that sounds, I think that sounds thing about, new to
yeah,
kind of
Ruben,
happen, yeah.
You know, Rick Rubin being involved, that they were going to kind of go a little bit to some roots and pull some things up. And then having John Paul Jones play the mandolin on it, I think
so it's disgusting.
Just, yeah, it just kind of has that classic sound to it.
It just sounds so good. Yeah, it sounds really good. So yeah, Lynn, track 9, favorite track on the album. It's just the level of, you know, musicianship on that track is just super high. Super high. Love it.
Strong.
And the vocals go well with it, so good track. Next one, track 10, Lord Have Mercy. Love the backup singers in the chorus. This kind of goes back to the script of the album, right? Like, you know, we have the couple change of pace tracks, and we go right back into just the dirty, sludgy rock and roll. And again, the slide, just Lord Have Mercy. Again, back to the script, right? Back to the mean,
that's right,
dirty, sludgy rock and roll. Lord Have Mercy. I'm going to hop a little bit farther into the song and just get some of this solo, because it is, I think, the best solo on the album.
Sick.
We're not going to have any faces left, because they're just being melted off right now. Lord Have Mercy. Yeah, that was just, that's a disgusting, great track. Next one, track number 11, National Dust. Again, dirty guitar riff opening up, shocker. It kind of has like, this one kind of has, the guitar is kind of in like the back, kind of like the background of the song, and it has more of like a pulsating kind of feel to this one.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of driving it, but more like that pulsating kind of feel. Really spacey solo later in this track. So check that one out. It's around like the 2 minute mark. And this is one where I don't hate the vocals. I actually like the vocals. So National Dust. Nasty, you know what I mean? Like it's just in the background, just like a heartbeat.
Yeah, almost just,
like
but just driving the whole song.
Driving the whole song, yeah, it's really nasty. And again, this track later in it has a great solo. It's like really a spacey kind of like spaced out solo, but yeah. It's really dirty. So
it's dusty.
Yeah, it's very dusty. That space dust, man. Yeah. So track 11, National Dust, another heater. Then now we'll go to the last track, track 12, Ain't Ugly None. So I gotta admit, the first time I listened to this album, it was at night, it was in the evening, and this track opens up with like a minute of, I don't even know, like just kind of spaced out. It kind of has a Bowie-like feel to it almost.
It's a bit odd.
And I started falling asleep. Like I kind of dozed off, but then like after that minute, it just, boom, it pops you right in the face. And the song is great. Like it's a great, great finishing track. Just my notes say the meteor of a guitar drops with the drums once that minute thing, because it does. You're like spaced out, and then it's just boom. So we'll hop to about that part. But again, guitar, dirty, gritty, whatever, sludgy you want to call it. And the vocals again aren't that bad in this track.
Yeah, it fits this song well.
Yeah, the guitars kind of have like, I don't know, like a metal kind of sound to it. But yeah, we'll play a little bit of this. Ain't Ugly None, and we'll fast forward through some of that spaced out intro, because you know. It's a little space. We don't want anybody falling asleep or anything.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, dirty, dirty. I mean, that it fits the bill. I'm glad that they closed it with this kind of track, because all the guys are, I guess, girl too, but all the members of the band on this track sound great. And so it was a great closing track. The spaced out intro is kind of whatever, but you can hear it. You can hear when the band comes in, it is a punch to the face.
Yeah, it's kind of like them doing what White Zombie was doing at the time.
Sure.
With mixing in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and, no, that's, yeah, and that's
then,
a good call.
Yeah, them being a little bit heavier and faster. I always thought it was a good closer as well.
Yeah, sounded great. So yeah, that was the last track, track 12, Ain't Ugly None. And again, yeah, so Raging Slab, name of the band, album Dynamite Monster Boogie Concert. Yeah, so that's that album. We're going to take a quick break. Yeah, I guess we'll talk about Gary Clark Jr.'s album, The Story of Sonny Boy Slim. We'll be right back.
Don't go away. We'll be back with more Album Swap in just a moment.
And we're back with The Story of Sonny Boy Slim. 2015 release from Gary Clark Jr. So he's from Austin, Texas. Definitely has the Texas blues sound in his guitar playing. But this album, I thought, he's got definitely hints of that throughout the album and the songs, but it doesn't kind of come at you like a lot of Texas blues albums would.
Right. Well, I don't think this is a Texas blues album. You know what I mean?
I should correct myself. I expected that, I guess, kind of coming
100%,
in thinking like,
right.
Oh, he's from Austin. You know, he's been playing with the likes of, you know, Eric Clapton and B.B. King. So it's going to be very kind of heavy guitar blues.
Jimmy Vaughn.
Jimmy Vaughn,
like, I guess, kind of discovered him or whatever.
Jimmy Vaughn kind of showed him the ropes. So he kind of got a start at Antone's in Austin, Texas. So I've actually been to Antone's. It's a fantastic club.
And Antone's known for, like, if there's young talent in Austin, he gets them on his stage. That's like a big, big thing about Antone's, is that they want to get all the local talent, give them a stage, I guess, to play on.
That's right.
And yeah, you've been there.
So yeah, I went there and saw actually a band called Omar and the Howlers, who played some with Jimmy Vaughn as well. They're really cool, actually. They play a lot of CCR.
Oh, cool.
Like Born on the Bayou and that stuff. But they're one of those bands that's been playing down there for many years, originally from Mississippi. But I digress. But I did get a great souvenir there. I got a Muddy Waters Antone's poster.
Oh, very cool.
It was like one of the first posters I ever bought. So I was down visiting family. I think it was like the day after Thanksgiving.
Sure.
And they were like, let's go see a show. And like, Omar and the Howlers are playing at Antone's. It's a great old club. I'm like, I'm there. So,
and it worked out. Now you have this little story. You have this.
That's right.
Yeah. A little story to drop in.
So Antone's, you know, definitely a birthplace of a lot of careers. You got to start there. Jimmy Vaughn, like we said, kind of shepherded that a bit. He's played with, you know, a lot of fantastic blues guitarists from the likes of Eric Clapton and B.B. King, you know, as well. He's played with the Rolling Stones, Sheryl Crow, Elisa Keys, the Foo Fighters. He's on one of the Sonic Highways episodes playing guitar.
Yeah, and Eric Clapton, he said, the famous 2010 Crossroads concert is where Gary Clark kind of came out, and that's where he announced himself to the world, I guess. And one of the stories goes that afterwards Clapton went up to him and said, you know, that just reminded me of why, you know, basically giving him new energy to go back and play. He was like, you know, now that reminded me of why I picked up the guitar, like, to begin with.
That's strong.
Yeah, very strong. And, I mean, you know, you go through ebbs and flows, and so to then have God, right? Eric Clapton.
That's
say,
right.
Say that. It carries weight. Definitely carries weight.
Yeah.
He impresses everybody he plays with, basically.
Yeah, that's nice. That's well, it's good credence right there. So, Sonny Boy Slim, the album, was released on September 11th, 2015. One of the interesting things I thought, or that I read about it, was how it was a very thoughtful mix of traditional and modern of what African-American music is, past and present. Like I said earlier, it took me a while listening to this album to kind of appreciate that essence that he has in this, because I thought it would be a little more rocking, but it wasn't. But then after listening to it some, listening to his voice, listening to the structure of the songs, the backing vocals, like bringing in horns and other stuff like that, it is a really great view of soul and R&B, and, you know, he brings in his Texas blues kind of guitar sound, but again, it's not overbearing.
Yeah, it's not a blues album, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he does a good job of sprinkling that in there. But yeah, it is. It's an R&B, you know, it's a soul album. His vocal range just...
Yeah, I was really amazed by the falsettos and all that he's doing.
And he produced this whole thing. I mean, I think he played all the instruments. That's all him, like all the vocals. I don't know about the strings. I don't know if he did all that. There's some like horns and strings, I think, on this album. But for the most part, he did it all. Like he, as opposed to his first album, he comes and he produces this and does all the instruments. And yeah, I mean, this is his music. You know, I feel like this is definitely his offering to the people, if you will.
Yeah, definitely. So it's you know, it's a bit autobiographical. The name is made up of his two nicknames. So his mom called him Sonny Boy, and he was called Slim from a lot of the guys in the Austin, Texas blues scene because he was tall and thin. And he wrote about this album. He recorded it after being on the road from that tour, and then said he enjoyed being with his mom and being called Sonny Boy. Took some time off and recorded this album. He also... Got involved with a model, had a baby, and that kind of influenced some of it. You can hear some of the child on some of the early tracks.
Yeah, the actual child is on it. Like, yeah.
Yeah, and as well, his sister sings on this.
He's got, yeah, I think two of his sisters or his two sisters sing on. Yeah, they do backup vocals on a couple of these. I think Church. I think the track Church, I think that's one of their own.
So he said that he missed being home, and I think it kind of shows. He kind of does... I feels reach back into influences from his childhood as well as where he's at today and where he's going now that he's like a father and he can kind of identify with his father and some of those things.
Yeah, almost like a concept album, I guess. I mean, maybe it is.
So the album cover artwork I do like as well because it's got a solid kind of monochrome red image of a kid with getting on a school bus, and then the sun has the type of Gary Clark Jr., the story of... Sonny Boy Slim.
Yeah, it is a really cool album.
Yeah,
album,
it's simple. It's you know, it's clean. Props on the album cover artwork as well. The other thing I was going to say that I read about Gary Clark Jr. was they were describing his music as Texas fuzz.
I like that.
Texas the likes fuzz. Of say ZZ Top and you know some even from say Janis Joplin and definitely Jimmy Vaughn. So and I think he does have that fuzz in here, but again I think it's more even soulful.
Yeah, for sure.
Than fuzzy.
Yeah,
so
it is more soulful than fuzzy. well said.
With that, we're going to dig right in, and we're going to go into the first track, "The Healing." This song kind of starts off with almost like a spiritual. One of the quotes I read that he said about this song, as well as the whole album, and I think it kind of sets the tone, is that music is his medicine, and you know, it's like a service.
Yeah, this music is my healing.
Yeah, so let's go ahead, listen to the beginning of that. Lord, I'm a horrified soldier, and I'm on the battlefield. I'm a horrified soldier, and I'm on the battlefield. I'll keep bringing souls to Jesus by the service.
The service.
Then I pray. The service is what?
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So he goes right into the Texas blues with the guitar there, and I like that. But again, it's much more of a slower paced song. He's got the kind of intro with the service part I love.
Yeah, it is a really cool intro, a nice little start to the album.
Yeah, and I think right about the 3 minute mark is where you know the chorus and stuff and the songwriting, you can really hear a lot of the talent that he brings to it.
Save us.
Yeah, so like the whole chorus coming in there. Again, it's got a bit of a gospel feel to it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, the music is the medicine, you know, and this is kind of like the service. They're getting ready to bring up the healing.
Yeah, it has this whole album, like, just feels very good to the ears. You know, it's like a very enjoyable, like, comfortable album. You know, it has like almost like a family type of feel, right? Like that we're going back home, going to church with the family. It just feels like a nice Sunday afternoon. That's what this album feels like.
So that's track one, The Healing. Again, it's a great opening track. Then we go into track two. This track, I think, is very interesting. It's got a bit of an acid rock sound to it. It gets a little bit more funky. Still kind of brings in the Texas blues guitar. So let's go ahead and listen to how this one kicks off. That line right there, everybody's talking about money, I gotta get me some.
Yeah, it's awesome. Great line.
So I think this is interesting. It's like he's kind of talking about, like, you know, what a grind it is to survive in the world, and that he's out there to, like, grind for his family. And again, that the acid rock, the guitar is it's sick.
It is. It is dirty.
So that's Grinder. It's also got a great guitar solo in it as well. I think, you know, and again, it's not as, say, long and as pronounced, say, as like Raging Slab with the slide and stuff. But I think he does bring his guitar in really good on these songs without them it dominating.
Absolutely, yeah.
Track three, Stars. So this is a song where he's kind of like talking about, you know, the challenges of being a star, you know, everybody kind of putting their hooks into you and trying to, you know, stay grounded and all that. It's got a very trippy intro. It's very groovy, you know, with the guitar at the beginning. He starts kind of singing in that falsetto voice. And it just really reminds me of, like, old 70s funk, especially some of the backing vocals.
Sure.
So let's play the intro, and then we're going to jump a little bit into the middle of it, about the 140 mark, where it gets really good.
Sure. Track three, Star.
Yeah. It's got that really cool kind of like space sound.
Funky too.
Isn't that funky sound?
The bass really thumps that one.
So that Star, again, it's got the fantastic kind of chorus there. It's got a lot of high range of his singing voice.
It's just a nice backing. It's groovy.
It's very groovy.
Very groovy.
Like I said, really, it's got that 70s old funk soul to it.
Definitely has a very old feel to it, yeah.
That's track number three, Star. Track number four, Our Love. At this song is again, it's very kind of soulful. It's got a little bit of organ at the beginning, then some horns come in. It's a love song. I thought his singing is really strong in it. You kind of really feel his emotion. And then, you know, again, the guitar kind of takes a back seat to a certain extent. You really don't hear it till after about the 2-minute mark. So the part I wanted to hear here was around the 220 mark, where he really kind of shines.
Sprinkling those like Texas blues licks just in there.
Yeah, just in the background. But I agree. Yeah, the horns, it's the organ that just totally captures that sound.
That's a good one too, man. That's definitely one you want to grab a girl and start dancing.
Right? Yeah,
it has a nice swing to it. It has a really nice swing to it.
Yeah, it's got that old fashioned kind of Motown sound to it a little bit. You know, like, yeah, it could be a slow song that's been around forever.
Yeah.
So that's track number four, Our Love. Track number five, Church. So this song, when he was asked about which song he would be most proud to play to Jimmy Vaughn, this was the song. That this was, quote, three chords in the truth.
That is so cool. Now, Gary Clark Jr., and we said this before, but he might be the coolest dude on the planet. Like, that's my definition of cool, Gary Clark Jr.
Yeah. So again, it's got a nice acoustic intro. It's very folksy. It's a bit of a hymnal. But then he kind of brings a harmonica in. So we're going to jump around a little bit. So we'll play a little bit at the beginning, and then we're going to play some of the harmonica.
Yeah, and this is the one, I think, where his sister's singing the backup vocals, I think, and during the chorus. So, Church.
It's got that, you know, again, that great acoustic sound to it.
It has a nice swing to it, too. Like, a nice little flowy, you know, kind of want to put your arms around your buddies and start singing it.
A bro hug song.
Yeah, it's a bro hug song. A lot of love in that song, yeah.
So, again, around, like, the 230 mark, he really plays the hell out of the harmonica. And I thought that, I really like that because that's one of the parts of the blues I love is the harmonica.
Sure. Sounds so good.
Yeah, the harmonica.
It adds so much to it, I feel like.
The tambourine kind of coming in. It also kind of reminded me a bit of like Neil Young.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
You know, that real kind of soulful, that earthy soulfulness.
Yeah, earthy soulfulness. That's a good one.
Yeah. So again, Church, great track. Takes us then to track six, Hold On. So this is a bit, again, of past and present aspect of this album where it's a story of his father surviving and kind of how he wants to, you know, hold on as well for his kid. Let's go to, like, the 105 mark.
Yeah.
you know, at the beginning, he kind of says the, you know, not out to steal your money. It's, you know, my pressure, my struggles, my demand. You know, the infant son kind of murmurs at the beginning of the track. So
okay, so this is the track where this
I'm sorry, I skipped kind of to the middle because I love that middle part with the horns.
Right,
and such.
Yeah, it's really nasty.
It really kind of gives you the full sound of it. And this again, this is a song you could play the whole thing. Even later, you know, in this, the horns and the guitar, actually right about here. Like, yeah, you could listen to it all day.
Just
it's
so sick. Yeah. Barry, that's the guitar. That's
yeah,
the guitar.
That's yep. Definitely the guitar.
This has been a face-melting podcast.
This is, yeah.
Number 7, 007 podcast.
That's
it's
right.
Just been a straight face-melter.
You guitar fans out there.
My face is going to be sore after this.
So that's track 6, Hold On. Bring us down to track 7, Cold-Blooded. This song definitely kind of, we were talking earlier, reminds me of like Curtis Blow.
Yeah.
Like Future Shock.
This is
again,
filthy.
The falsetto on here, it's groovy. The guitar kind of comes in late, but Cold-Blooded, track 7, let's give a listen. Yeah,
man. Whew. I'll tell you what. That's some good stuff, man. That's some good stuff. And so Cold-Blooded, he when he was supporting this album, he went to Colbert, did a late show with Stephen Colbert, and played this song and did it with John Batiste. So if you don't know who that is, John Batiste, Google him. He's a straight monster.
Stay Human.
Yeah, Stay Human's the name of his band. He's just incredible, but he played the keys, or I guess the organ, and Gary Clark obviously did his thing, and they have a back and forth. You got to Google. Go ahead and Google and try to find it online. It's not actually on YouTube. It's been taken down. It's not like Vimeo or something like that, but it's worth checking out. It's yeah.
So yeah, Cold-Blooded, another just great sound. I think again, past and present with that. Then brings us to track 8, Wings. This has, again, a really deep groove. It's kind of psychedelic. I wanted to ask you at the beginning, the drums, kind of how do they get in the sound? So let's play the beginning, and then actually we'll play a couple other parts because this song's got some really good parts.
His vocals sound like John Legend, to be completely honest.
Yeah,
right,
his vocals are fantastic here. Really fits that sound. And so, yeah, so I guess on the snare there, they got just like that real loose rattle.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. It's kind of like just a looser snare, probably. I mean, definitely the way they mic'd it, too. It kind of sounds like you might have like a towel or like a handkerchief or something over. A lot of times I'll do that to kind of like soften, kind of give it that loose sound, more of a laid-back sounding snare.
Yeah.
It'll also be kind of like a bigger one, too.
That's
or
true.
At least like, you know, deeper, so... It'll kind of give you know more air for the sound waves to bounce back and forth. So
it kind of drags, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, it's a really cool effect, and it goes very well in that track.
So then around about the 2:45 mark here, the backing vocals, the composition on, I agree, it's like John Legend. It sounds so just well put together, well done. Everyone knows.
Guitar.
How yeah, that guitar is so cool.
Yeah, man, that's cool.
And again, the drums kind of drive it. It's a great song. And he brings you know, a little bit of the Texas blues guitar in, but again, it's kind of
sprinkled in. Yeah, for sure.
That's track 8, Wings. Track 9, BYOB, which we all know stands for Bring Your Own Biscuit.
Yeah, and it's just a single minute track. I love that.
Single minute track, yeah. And like I was telling you earlier, this kind of reminds me a little bit of like Lenny Kravitz kind of has.
Definitely has that, sound that Lenny Kravitz sound. Yeah, no.
He's
sure.
Got the horns that come in again. So we'll listen to the beginning of it, about like the first 35 seconds.
Cool. That's a cool song, man.
I got
cool
money track. In my pocket. I got drink in my hand. BYOB.
Feeling good.
Yeah. So again, great kind of groovy sound he's got there.
Mm-hmm.
BYOB then brings us to track 10, Can't Stop.
Can't Sleep.
Sorry, Can't Sleep. I've got Can't Sleep here, and I was reading off yours, and I didn't read through my glasses.
Can't Stop, Can't Sleep, man.
So this song is like, you know, kind of met a gal at a party, you know. He's kind of like, you know, lovesick with her, and it's a bit of a love song. I kind of like it. It's a bit funky, almost like more Stay in the Time.
Sure.
And again, the kind of the backing vocals, and even a little bit like some Daft Punk, that Get Lucky guitar sound.
Yeah, no doubt, for sure. So we'll play a little bit, I guess, of Can't Sleep.
Yeah, Can't Sleep. Especially like right there.
Yeah.
Kind of reminds me of that old like 80s kind of funk.
For
like,
sure. It does have, the guitar does sound like that, like the Nile Rodgers, Daft Punk kind of Get Lucky.
Yeah.
It definitely has that, the chic, right?
Yeah, the chic
sound. The
yeah.
chic guitar yeah. sound. That's
what everything's based off of.
Yeah. But that has like really dancey, like I feel like you could hear that in a club probably.
Totally.
You wouldn't even know it's Gary Clark.
It was a surprising song too. You know, again, the other ones didn't have as much of a upbeat, funky tempo like this one did.
Yeah, this was definitely more dancey.
So that's track 10, Can't Sleep. Track 11, Stay. This I like, you know, talking about sludgy in the first half of the episode. This has got a little bit of a sludgy, distorted bass in it. You know, it's a bit crazy, acting like a fool story. Reminds me again of a little bit of, like, Lenny Kravitz somewhat.
Sure.
So we'll listen to the intro, and then actually we'll listen to a little bit of the chorus as well.
Very sludgy.
You know, again, I like it. It kind of has that real power behind it and such. And then, you know, he kind of about the 1 minute mark here, he kind of gets into the main chorus, and it really rocks.
It's a rocking song.
You got to listen to the beginning to hear that sludgy bass, but then it comes together so well in the middle of the song.
I can kind
of
hear the Lenny Kravitz thing. I mean,
it's got a little bit of Lenny, you know, and that's what I was saying. When I listened to it in the middle of the week, I was kind of listening to it actually out of order. It was on shuffle. And then I heard this one, and I was like, oh, wow, yeah, that kind of reminded me a little bit of Lenny.
Sure.
So that's track 11, Stay. Track 12, Shake. This song I really liked as well. It sounds a bit like an old blues, or it's an old blues song, you know, almost like the Stones, late 60s.
Sure. Exile on Main Street, kind of.
Yeah, yeah. And he's really just kind of really cool and controlled as a singer here. So let's pick it up around the 110 mark, where he kind of really shines on this track. But it jams.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I even listened to it right now. I was like, you know, that's like I said, it's like an old Stones song. That's like a song, like, you could almost have seen, like, Grateful Dead would have covered, you know, and changed it up a little bit. But it's got that Texas twanginess to it mixed with the blues. So I really like this song. Definitely kind of reminded me of that era. Track 13, Down to Ride.
Final track of the album.
Final track of the album. This one I read some interesting notes about how it was a bit of a quiet storm with a keyboard cushion.
Ooh, I like that.
So we'll play a little bit of the beginning, and then we're going to go a little bit in the chorus because he's got a real funky kind of retro vibe in the middle.
Cool.
Smoothness.
That's what I like to call lovemaking music, bro.
Yeah, yeah. Again, he comes in with the falsetto vocals. I mean, just sounds amazing.
His vocals sound so good there. Wow.
Yeah, and like I said, it's a bit of a quiet storm coming in there.
Yeah, it is like that, yeah.
So right around the 140 mark, like, he hits the chorus and, like, the synth comes in and just really rounds out the sound.
Oh, is a long track too.
It's a long track.
It's the longest one on the album.
At the end,
under 8 minutes. So.
Yeah, and at the end, he's got a real kind of trippy fade out that he jams out. So definitely, you know, check that out. The other thing, you know, again, listening to this reminded me again of like Nile Rodgers, that chic guitar sound right before the keyboards come in.
Yep.
But yeah, again, Down to Ride. And I think actually, like looking back at my notes, like the last like 4 or 5 tracks of this album, he really ends strong. You know, he kind of, again, it's, you know, tells a bit of these different parts of the story, kind of grabs both his past and present and future music and heritage and kind of brings it all together. So that is the story of Sonny Boy Slim from Gary Clark Jr. We're going to take a quick break, be back with our ratings and hashtags, and wrap it up.
I cannot wait. Be right back.
You've been listening to Album Swap at albumswap.net. We will be right back.
And we are back.
Back. I'm not even sure where we get that from, but I like it.
It's kind of old school. It's got rockabilly.
Got a little boogie to it,
yeah,
you know?
Boogie.
Boogieing it on down.
We're here with the closing segment. Hashtags, ratings of the two albums that we swapped this week.
Yep, score 1 out of 10. Fraction decimal points are available.
They apply. You want to go first? You want me to go first?
You can go ahead. Go ahead.
I'll go first. Gary Clark Jr. album that I reviewed, The Story of Sonny Boy Slim. I gave it a rating of 9.01.
Whoa, nice. So now you went above 9.
Went above 9.
Last week when I went above 9 on Presence by Led Zeppelin, that was the first time
The
podcast had gone...
Ceiling shattered for good now.
9.01, I like that.
I gave him 9.01 because I thought, like, the more I listened to it, the more I kind of got what he was trying to do with this album. And it's definitely just, I mean, strong throughout. The fact that he, you know, kind of composed all this after taking some time off and reflected, I thought kind of showed in his songwriting, playing and all that. And like I said, it was totally different than what I thought it was going to be. So that's always a good surprise. The hashtag I gave it is Sonny Soul. Now, not spelled like S-O-N-N-Y, like the character, his nickname.
Right, like on the album.
I'm spelling it like the giant ball of fire in the middle of our universe.
Oh, the sun.
Yeah, the sun.
Oh, that little thing.
That sun, yeah. And so, like, Sonny in terms of, like, I think it's a bit uplifting, even though, you know, he talks about, like, challenges and all that. I thought his attitude and like the emotion was kind of uplifting. And again, it's a bit more soulful than bluesy or Texas rock or anything like that. So I give it Sonny Soul.
I like that. Hashtag Sonny Soul. So, okay, so that's 9.01 was the rating and hashtag Sonny Soul. All right, so I had Raging Slab, name of the band, album Dynamite Monster Boogie Concert. Crazy, crazy name. I gave it an 8.2. 8.2, really like the album. If Kelly's the lead singer, 8.9 probably. Who knows?
Oh, yeah.
Who knows?
Might be off the hook. It could be 9.
But yeah, like the guitars are so great. I love the couple random songs. Lynn is just a great song. Great album. Love the album. So 8.2. Hashtag, kind of playing off the name of the album, my hashtag is hashtag Boogie Monsters of Rock. And I don't really love it, but I don't hate it, and I can't think of anything else right now, so we're going to go with it. Dynamite Monster Boogie Concert by Raging Slab. I gave it an 8.2. Hashtag Boogie Monsters of Rock.
So that's a couple times, or the last 2 weeks, you've had the album title or parts of in the hashtag.
Well, I'm not going to say I'm like a genius or anything, but that is intentional, Brian.
I like it. Yeah. I like it. You know, a little co-branding.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. You always got to be branding.
So those are our ratings and hashtags for this week's swap. Again, wanted to share any music news. So last night I had a chance to go see the Band Together concert. It was Ben Folds playing a piano.
Playing one of those things.
Playing a piano, yeah.
And it was at Red Hat, right?
It was at Red Hat Amphitheater.
Downtown Raleigh.
But what I wanted to really say was it's a great organization. I actually went out there and volunteered in the morning and helped out. I know several people that are involved there. If you get a chance, go to one of their events. They have great live music. They support great causes. Like last night, they raised about $1 million dollars, or a little over $1 million for the YMCA.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. That's
awesome. Next chance you get, go out to the Band Together events. Excuse me. Support your local bands and local charities.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. That's awesome. And one last thing we wanted to mention before we close is unfortunate news. May 1st, what's today? May 8th or 9th or something like that?
Around there.
Yeah, so May 1st, there's a tribute concert or for the 70th birthday of musician called Colonel Bruce Hampton, who is a legend in like the, I guess, kind of jam band scene, yeah. Especially out, you know, coming out of Atlanta, the Georgia music scene. He's huge. I mean, gave like Susan Tedeschi her break. Jimmy was one of the first people that signed or kind of worked Jimmy Herring in.
Yeah.
Otil,
yeah.
Gurnbridge, Jeff Sipe, Fishman yeah. was played with him. Yeah, so they had a tribute concert for his 70th birthday the day after his birthday, unfortunately, but also kind of like poetically. He passed away during the final song. So they had over 30 musicians. All of them were up there. Warren Haynes, Derek Trucks, Jimmy Herring, John Bell from Widespread Panic. All these musicians were up there, and he collapsed during the last song, which was Turn On Your Love Light. Passed away that evening. So, a little RIP out there to Colonel Bruce Hampton, who was a legend. Yeah, turn on your love light.
He kind of went out on a high note.
Oh, so absolutely. I mean, sign me up. I'll sign up to go out like that on my 70th birthday.
And yeah, and I agree. I mean, Colonel Bruce, I mean, I remember seeing him in the 90s.
Yeah,
you know,
with the Aquarium Rescue Unit.
And, you know, he'd already been playing for a while then. He's played, I believe, up at like Merlefest and a lot of those events.
He's a legend.
Fantastic musician.
A legend.
Yeah, legend, great performer. So really sad to see him go.
Yeah, so RIP, Colonel Bruce Hampton, a legend. But yeah, so that's episode 7. Until next time, we'll catch y'all later.
You have been listening to Album Swap. Visit albumswap.net for all the latest episodes.